Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down, burn down. The system fails, the exit moves. Wake up the silence with the hands. I'm feeling the love in the silence club. I can feel the space between us. Little Captain and the common man. Time to show them all.
Welcome to the Star Chamber Show, and we've got a great show for you tonight. This is Stephen Zimmer, of course, and tonight your co-hosts are going to be Michael West, Susan Roddy, and Selah Janelle, and we're going to have two great, great guests tonight, Rosie from Books on the Subway, and, of course, the ever-amazing Jory of Jory Loves a Story. So we are looking forward to the show tonight in a big way, but we've got some pretty cool stuff to announce as well tonight. And to that end, first of all, we just had a great time out at Authors Fair in Madison at that book place with the awesome Frank Hall last weekend. We had quite a few of our Seven Star Press gang got to go there. And first of all, I picked up a great book that weekend. And I'll give you a little bit of hint, see if you can guess the title, co-hosts. But this is a book by a couple of rock and roll angels who are on fire with their writing. Kind of book you can get on Amazon or read by the light of candles. Pick up one for the neighbors or decorate the empty table in your house. Really, it's as easy as pie, even when you're on the transition to a working vacation. But ask the guru. Ideas abound, and you can go across the universe, enjoy all the little things, and find your way to Eden. Get this book. What title am I speaking of, co-hosts?
Oh, my goodness. Well, that sounds like the ever-popular short story collection Lost in the Shadows to me.
You would be correct. You would be
correct.
Yeah,
I don't know who wrote that, but it's a fabulous book. I mean, you know.
That was my book fair purchase, was Lost in the Shadows, and I have a trade paperback copy with one of the most unique inscriptions I've gotten yet from an author.
Ever proving that you never know how I'm going to sign a book until we're talking and you put it in front of me, so it's a dangerous thing to do.
Well, if that was a prelude of what's coming up, then 2 weeks in Evansville, we're in trouble because we have the big sale of Janelle's book release weekend coming up, and that's going to be great.
Yeah.
We've got a confirmed appearance at the Alexandria Public Library in Mount Vernon. We also are going to be at EvilCon.
So excited.
And excited. And even better, tomorrow we will be doing a cover reveal for Selah. So at 11 a.m. Eastern. Yes, we will. So there's a whole lot coming up in Selah's world. And of course,
so excited.
It's going to be awesome. And with one of our other hosts, we have some big news to report. We have now, he can add bestseller status, and he has a title that is a national bestseller, Mr. Michael West. Congratulations. Cinema of Shadows hit number 4 in all of Amazon on the horror chart. And I mean the horror chart, as in like the 5th place spot was Stephen King. So Michael, you a national bestseller. Congratulations, man.
Yeah, it felt very surreal. That's for sure.
No, it was
so freaking hard. You have earned it. If anyone deserves this, it's you, dude.
It was a great time. Yeah.
But when I woke up, when I woke up in the morning and saw that I was number 4 and Stephen King was number 5, I thought I was still asleep. So
yeah, like alternate universe world. Like when I saw that, like when I started seeing the Innocence come in, like I think I was almost like probably nearly as happy for you as you were. Like I was trying to reply to like all of your statuses, and I was like jumping up and down for you. I was so stoked. It's just so cool.
Well, thank you. Well, the thanks go really to the readers though, because without them I wouldn't be able to do what I do. So thanks to everyone who picked it up and who is still picking it up for your support, and I hope you enjoy the stuff that's coming up.
Yeah, it's a big day. It's Seven Star Press's first national best-selling title and our first national best-selling author, and following close behind Michael this week and also reaching bestseller status in another category was D.A. Adams with the Brotherhood of Dwarves, and I can also vouch that he's a great guy who's going to be on the show pretty soon, and we're going to throw him to our group of lions and as co-hosts here. And he hit number 8 in all of fantasy and for the Brotherhood of Dwarves, and so he's a bona fide bestseller title as well. So it was a big week on our end, and we have a lot of cool books available for 99 cents, and even tonight you can get The God Killers, Great Urban Fantasy from John Allen. You can also get
it's awesome.
Jen Mulvihill's The Boxcar Baby, which is young adult steampunk with a dystopian edge. That's also available tonight on Amazon for 99 cents. And yours truly has his Chronicles of Abe short story collection out for 99 cents. So it's part of our spring fling. So, yeah, we've got a lot of cool stuff. Next week, just to give you a little hint, we got Stephen Shrewsbury, David Blaylock, and Jackie Gamber, and among our offerings for next week. So, along with a couple of anthologies too, so be on the lookout for that. One of which is associated with Michael, Vampires Don't Sparkle, and
they don't.
Then Alexander Brown was the editor in Southern Haunts, and Southern Haunts anthology will also be part of our offerings next week. So you get a little bit of a scoop on next week. But yeah, Jackie, I mean, flawless YA fantasy book. David's got a tremendous urban fantasy series. Shrewsbury writes sword and sorcery that hits every bit as hard as like a Robert E. Howard. And I happen to be biased about the Vampires Don't Sparkle anthology because I have a story in it. But I think everyone that's read it would agree that it's pretty darn good, with guys like Gary Brownbeck and Lucy Snyder and just Tim Wagner, amazing writers in that one. And then Southern Haunts 2 actually gets debuted at Mid-South Con this week, so it's red hot for that franchise. And I wish Alex couldn't make it tonight, but he will be here next week, so hopefully he'll get to talk a little bit about that. But lots of stuff happening. Yeah, definitely keeping us rolling here. So, but it's also tonight. Yeah, we want to definitely get started with tonight's guests, and tonight's guests, we've got two. One that you know, she's of course she's been a guest co-host with us, and she's also been on for the Jory Loves a Story blog, and that of course is the amazing Jory, who does a lot of tweet outs for us on a regular basis as our unofficial show secretary. And then also tonight we have Rosie of Books in the Subway. So we are going to be talking about taking a little bit of a turn into the whole library world, and we're going to be taking a turn into the whole world of Books in the Subway and Books in the Underground and Booking the Rails and all kinds of exciting stuff. And I want to say, too, that I apologize that we could not get the full bios on Blog Talk Radio's page. They have a limit on characters, so I was only able to get Rosie's bio up there because, yeah, unfortunately, Jory wrote me a wonderful bio for both Holly at Books in the Underground and herself, but the word count limits got kind of boxed us in. So we're definitely going to get at least Jory's up there for the next appearance she's on. But anyway, without further ado, I have just brought him on. We welcome Jory, and we welcome Rosie. You are on the Star Chamber Show. Welcome.
Hi, Rosie's here. How are you?
Hi, so is Jory. Nice to see everyone again.
There they are. So we've got a lot to talk about tonight for both of you. So I think, we got to meet, of course, Jory. You've been on the show. You've been a guest. You've been a co-host. So the audience has a little idea of who you are. But probably the first thing we should do is introduce Rosie and talk a little bit on Books on the Subway is, and that'll kind of lead into what we're going to get into tonight.
Exactly.
Yeah, that would be great, actually. It's my first time having an interview, so it's a bit I don't know how to start with this thing. So,
Rosie, why don't you talk about how you found Holly and how Holly inspired you to start Books?
So, the birth story, the birth of Books on the Subway, it's actually very interesting how it happened. I found out about Holly on a Facebook post that someone reposted, and I looked up the Books on the Underground website, and I'm like, my God, that's a genius idea. And I love to read, and I always read on the subway. Otherwise, I can never, like, focus because it's so crowded and it's a long commute. And I'm like, Eureka, I should do this in New York. And it literally took me, like, a few minutes to go from, should I do this or, yeah, I'm totally doing this. So I tracked Holly down on Facebook, and very stalkerish, and I reached out to her, and I told her that, you know, I really like what you're doing in London, and if it's okay with you, I would really like to do it in New York. And she was actually very excited, and we worked together because she was a designer, so she had already designed her stickers, and funny enough, we both work in advertising. She works as a designer, so I'm the account, so I kind of managed the project, and she did it. So we designed a sticker and set up all the social media website, like Twitter, Facebook, a blog, and voila, it was born then. And she had already set up a few connections with some of the authors in the UK, so they were very nice to send me some books so I can start off. And bit by bit, I started gaining my own followers here in the US. And I have so many people sending me books right now. They're taking over my living room, actually. And basically, this is how it started. Just from the need of having to do something in the subway to ease the commute.
Very cool.
And you wanted it. It's sort of an idea of having a portable library where volunteers are.
Yeah, and then exactly. A lot of people read on the subway, and a lot of people just stare and stare in the void, and you can tell oh my God, I have a very long commute, and I have nothing to do. So it's like you have books around you. Hopefully, at some point, I'm going to have a book, all the time. But you can just pick up a book and start reading and pass the time and maybe hopefully get some light readers to become heavier readers or non-readers to become light readers. Just, spread the word.
How do you choose, what types of titles that's what I was curious about. What type of titles do you pick to be the most appealing to, say, a non-reader or somebody, because you don't know what kind of readers may be on the subway at a given time?
You know, a lot of people ask me, which kind of books do you take? What kind of books can we send you? And I'm like, who am I to pick what the people on the subway want to read? You know, I think every single person has their own taste, and no matter what title or what book or what genre I leave on the subway, there's bound to be someone who's going to be interested in it. So I try not to limit myself into a specific title or a specific genre. I just drop anything from any kind of book. I even once dropped a business book because, maybe there's someone who wants to start a business and find this. You know, the people in New York are so varied and so, and come from so many different backgrounds and have so many different tastes. So I don't think I want to limit the options. I'm just going to put it out there, and if someone finds it and likes it, then there you go.
Do you
really
have publishers that approach you?
Sorry?
Do you still have publishers that approach you?
Yes, I do. I actually had a publisher that is here in New York just send me a book last week, just randomly. They're like, hey, it's been a while since we sent you something, so here you go, have a book. It's like,
it's really nice.
It's a recurring customer.
Now, are you getting a lot of feedback on Twitter from people that find the books?
This is where I'm trying to figure out my next steps to boost this. I think at the moment I'm not having as much feedback as I would like, partly because I think when people are picking up the books on the subway, they're usually underground and there's no connection. So instinctively, like, they don't think of doing it right there. And I don't know if it just falls through the cracks later, but I haven't had as much feedback as I would like on Twitter. But I do have a few plans and tricks under my sleeve that I'm planning on moving forward with in order to promote more response from the commuters.
Well, the reason I brought that up is because I was trying to figure out how I could start talking about booking the rails, which was my idea in late 2013. I accidentally discovered the Books on the Underground movement by getting a random tweet in my home feeds. And back then, I was only on Twitter a few weeks, so I was still navigating and sorting it out. And I heard through that tweet about this book's being randomly dropped on the London Tube. And I'm a Briton by heritage, and I'm an Anglophile just by passion. So anything doing with Britain, I light up like a Christmas tree with joy. So I tweeted back, and Holly inspired me to get involved. And then Rosie started tweeting me about books on the subway in New York City. And between two of them, I couldn't figure out where I was supposed to fly first, London or New York City, except I couldn't fly to either one at that time. So I thought to myself, how does a girl in the southeast of the United States actively participate and contribute to this movement of public libraries on the rails, which is all done through volunteering on their behalf and kind of encouraging the bookish culture one book at a time? And I thought, well, I have a book blog. Why don't I turn it into a feature? So the feature is called Booking the Rails, where I'm going to feature one book which was left on either the tube, the London rails, or on the rails in New York City. And then I'm trying to generate a conversation in the book blogosphere and go from blogger to blogger, from reader to reader, and try to get more feedback to both Rosie and Holly. And maybe someone who's picking up these books is going to say, oh, wait a minute, this is now socially becoming aware. This is starting to go viral. And I don't know if it'll go viral, but I was hoping if more people start talking about it, maybe someone will tell their aunt or their uncle or their grandfather or their mother or their sister or their brother. And someone in London, New York, would say, oh, well, I didn't know I was supposed to tweet, or I didn't know I was supposed to acknowledge this. Maybe I should start tweeting and talking and sharing. And so that's sort of how Booking the Rails came to be.
Jory, to your point, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think also people would like to know, kind of have a bit of a background to see that they want to be involved. Like, you just jumped on the wagon with us, but a lot of people would be like, I'm not sure how serious this is. I'm not sure if this is just like a one-time thing. So I think as much, like, the further we go along and establish this as a bigger project than just dropping books on the subway, I think people will become more willing to be involved as well.
Yes, I wanted to get into the social conscience. I just said I wanted to get into the social conscience. So if I'm blogging about it, someone's going to pass a link on, or someone's going to say, hey, this blogger's talking about it. Maybe this is bigger than just a one-off and a one-time deal. And so if I can do a small part until I can actually be in New York and London one day, then I feel like I'm contributing to your mission and to your movement and to promoting libraries and reading.
Yep, totally.
Well, with that in mind, I think for both of you, we've definitely talked about where you kind of want to grow your, respective programs, and, you want to promote the love of reading, which, I mean, obviously is something we all want, but obviously there has to be some sort of emotional undercurrent or reasoning for this. So, like, if you were shooting for the stars, like, emotionally, why are these programs important to you, Rosie and Jory? Why is this something that we should move forward in? Why should people, emulate this and maybe try to start their own programs in different, you know, commuter areas or things like that. Why should the word be gotten out? What is so important about books in the day-to-day that makes you feel like, yes, this is something that we really need to push forward?
I'm going to answer this in two parts. One, which is my personal, like my personal experience, and two, what I think it's going to do for New Yorkers in particular. So the first thing, like for me, when you, a book is, it's an airport and it takes you wherever you want to go. It takes you away from your life. It takes you away from all your worries, and it just takes you to this world where anything is possible, really. And for me, if I don't, like, if I don't have a book I'm reading at the moment or at any point, I feel like, ugh, like I'm so sick of real life. Where am I going to go? So this is why I think books are really, really important. They take you to a world where, and you get to choose that world, you know. I want to read about a fictional dragon-filled world. I want to read about another political world. I want to read about, you know, the 20s. You know, so you get to choose wherever you want to go. And
totally.
I think it opens up these doors, and it's just an escape. I think it's really an escape, and there's really no end to it. I keep looking at how many books there are to read, and like, oh my God, I'm never going to finish in a lifetime. So it's just, for me,
yeah,
it's an escape. And this is kind of why I wanted to do it in New York, because I think a lot of New Yorkers, and this is where I come to part two of my answers, I think a lot of New Yorkers need an escape of some of the struggles they have in their lives, because in this, on the subway, you see all kinds of people. You see the Michael Kors bags and you see the plastic trash bags. So I feel like every person is carrying a load somehow in different different levels. But I think, like, if these people would just have 1 hour a day to dive into a world that's not their own, that's not their troubles, that's not their financial or work or family troubles, how good would that be for their mental sanity, you know? It's just a mental sanity thing, mm-hmm, in the end. And this is one of the reasons why I really wanted to do it in New York, and I thought it fit greatly in New York, because I think people really need an escape, and, you know, books are easy to escape into.
Totally. I feel like,
and for me, I'm approaching it from the social angle, because I think part of movements that are successful, because this is a grassroots movement, is when you get into the social conscience. If you can get people talking about something that's full of joy and happiness for the pure bliss of just enjoying that one moment with that book or that author, or the unexpected joy of having a gift, a light in your life that you didn't even see coming on a day maybe that you needed the best lift of spirits you could get, and here's this book on a turntable or a chair or on the seat next to you where you normally sit, or with the pamphlets in the subway itself, I think slowly that'll start showing the humanity that sometimes gets lost in the chaos of our lives, because everyone has something they're going through. Everyone has struggles at different times of their lives, and everyone needs that little unexpected bit of bliss, if you want me to say.
Mm-hmm.
And as a blogger, I like getting all that excitement. I like gushing about things that I'm passionate about and getting people have this fever of excitement that kind of becomes contagious. And if that can become contagious enough to start someone to start a conversation in their own life and get people talking, maybe they'll see that the world isn't really painted so black, that there's still a lot of light and a lot of hope and a lot of joy. And if we keep reaching for the happiness, we're going to be surrounded by it at some point.
That's cool. I totally agree. Like, I think emotionally and escapism, that's, are some very valid points. Kind of piggybacking on this, because, I mean, you guys definitely are into the social aspect of Jory and, you know, now the social project for you, Rosie. One of the things that I've noticed, I have a very passionate interest in old stories, old folklore, and oral tradition as well. And it seems to me with, you know, these modern times, do you feel like, you know, something that this might fill in, like an empty place, do you feel like as a people, you know, socially we've kind of lost that power of story, or we're not necessarily sitting around the fire or the dinner table every night? I mean, obviously not necessarily just sharing, like, family tales, but, like, of things that are bigger than ourselves, you know, where a lot of the old tales were oral tradition, you know, and books have taken that place. But do you feel like maybe this could fill up something that maybe people, the space that people unconsciously carry around with them, you know, that they, maybe they're missing this part of their, you know, life and they don't even know it?
Yes, I
know.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say that I agree, because the books I'm choosing to focus on are actually the books that I felt could evolve into social change topics and conversations. A lot of the books they're putting on the rails are ones that are thought-provoking, they're challenging, they not only take you to a different time and place, they're evoking you to think about different things in different ways. They're kind of perception changers. They're allowing you to see the world through a different pair of lenses that not only heightens your enlightenment of that moment, but takes you to a different level of understanding. And I'm not going to reveal the book I reviewed, even though I kind of did in a tweet if people were paying attention. My first one I picked is really about social change and social mindsets and getting in past prejudicial opinions that you might have or may not even be aware of you having. And so I want to talk about the books that are being left behind that kind of get not just take you away from your life, but put you in a place where you can really think about something with a greater sense of purpose. And I think books and the stories you're talking about with the old fables and the heart, the stories that had a lot of heart and girth to them, the ones that had breath to them that tell you about life morals and life lessons and ideals, I think that we are stemming away from that as a society. I think people are trying to do too much instant gratification, and they're not sinking into stories that have a little bit more depth to it. So if we're proving that you can read books of depth yet on a train or on a commute or as you're going home or as you're coming to work or as you're coming in for something happy in the city, I'm sure people on the rails are also going for things like on their day off, then I think we can start to show that reading doesn't have to be scheduled. It can be random, and it can be fun, and it can just be as exciting as picking up that first book.
Very cool, very cool. Rosie, how about you? What do you have to say on the matter?
I mean, I'm thinking about it in a bit of a different way than Jory is. Not that I totally agree with you, but I'm going to talk about it in a different way. Like, when I read old stories, and I'm a huge fan of the classics, I tend to read one between, like, every other book. I feel like there's a sense of tradition that I think that we're losing, and which is what it bothers me, actually. I'm going to say that. It does bother me. Like, there are some manners that you see in these old books. There are some traditions. There are some values that are missing, I think, in this world. And I think this is what value these classic books bring to me, and the old folk stories, and it's like family values, moral values, traditions, family traditions, all these things. I feel like they're missing from our life today. I feel like they're missing some of the recent books that I've read, like the ones that have come out in the recent years. So I think this is what these old stories hold for me.
That's sort
really
of what
cool.
I was trying to. You said it better.
You said it in social focus, which is what you're specialized in. Like, you're an awesome blogger. I'm still developing that side of me, but for me, like, yeah, this is it. This is why I love reading classic books.
Mm-hmm.
For me,
I agree. I think it's very, like, in some ways, I'm very into, like, the Jungian school of thought, and I think with, like, what you're talking about, Rosie, definitely there are things missing in the older that you don't see, like, that you do in some of the older classic titles, and even with some of the more, like, popular titles that try to play with some of the archetypes, it's kind of done, like what you were saying, Jory, it's more kind of instant gratification, or, you know, it's sort of, you feel like there's an angle to it, and I definitely think it's good to try to get people reading in general, but to try to provide them with something deeper. You know, I think there are definitely some things that stories can give you that fill a need that you may not even know you want. And for me personally, I tend to gravitate to a lot of things that use some of those archetypes or some of those classic, like, hero arcs or whatever, because it just sort of fills a need or encouragement or something that, you know, on a day-to-day basis we've kind of lost.
And I think we're losing parts of our humanity. We're losing the connection to our human conditions. When you start to erode away the traditions and the lessons that were passed down and the stories and the, just the style of storytelling that's kind of being eroded away a little bit, I think we start to lose part of our identities of how we leave behind legacies in story and how we impart our present to those that are coming in the future. You know, we had all that from the past, but sometimes in the present, I think some people lose sight of that. They lose sight of what stories can do.
I really hope our future generation looks back 2 generations back, by the way. I really do.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying...
Do you think sometimes that with the focus of trying to... And I'm not trying to pick on anyone, because I think, you know, I definitely am into some modern series and titles that I like very much. But do you think the thought process these days is that people are too intent on trying to find something that's either going to become a franchise or become something, you know, I don't want to say instant gratification because even, you know, to do that takes a little bit for it to catch on, but do you think they're too focused on maybe this could be a movie or maybe this could be this or that instead of just realizing, hey, this is a really good story or we need to find something that's a really, really good, meaty story that could stick to people instead of just how can we reshape this to sell merchandise and do what we need to do?
I can address that as a writer because when I was 14, I was in a writer's class to sort of take my writing to the next level because I was still learning about dialogue and narrative and how to find that balance. I was a young writer when I decided to become one, but I wanted to grow and I wanted to stretch my wings. And the first thing they asked me, are you writing a book or are you writing a motion picture? And I said, what? And then that it was basically leading into a longer discussion about marketing the novel as a motion picture as you write it versus writing the novel to encourage someone's imagination to have that interpersonal connection with the novel itself. I write books, I write novels, and I love creating stories and getting that connection with the reader. I'm not writing for a franchise or a motion picture or a studio or an independent filmmaker. I'm writing for the printed word on the printed page in a printed bound book so someone can pick it up, take it with them, and see where it leads them. Because books and stories are individual journeys. The writer is only one half of that journey, and the reader completes the circle. So that's where I stand on that. I think there's too much emphasis on milling stories that are in print for motion pictures. I'm not saying that they shouldn't find stories that need to come to light in motion pictures, but I don't think we always have to have a novel go to motion picture with either ahead of its generation or within the same generation it was released. And I'm not picking on anything in particular either. I just have that observation as a writer.
I agree with you, Jory. I think a lot of stories, the latest ones that I've been reading that are more recent, I feel like there's more, like it's kind of written to be adapted into television or a movie, trying to find the next Harry Potter franchise, trying to find the next, you know, but
they're trying to get the Sorcerer's Stone, and you can't get the Sorcerer's Stone if you're seeking it.
And I love what you just said about the writer's only half of the journey and the reader's next, because every time I read, I'm going to refer to Harry Potter here again, because one, I'm a huge fan, and two, it's my guilty pleasure, and I'm rereading it for the 6th time today, so don't judge me. But
I'm Ravenclaw, so I can't judge you. I'm in the house of Ravenclaw.
So when I read this book, I have a whole different vision in my head than what is in the movies. And when I see the movies, I actually get upset because it's not how I imagined it in my head.
Way.
That's not how this is supposed to look. So when you said that the writers only have the journey and the reader takes it further, like, this is totally right, because everyone imagined things in their heads. They imagine the the scenery, the setting is completely different than each person. So this is why I think I don't always enjoy watching the movies that are adapted from a book, because no, in my head I had it in a whole different way, and I don't want you to ruin how I imagined it. So I think this is where books become more personal. It's in your brain, it's in your mind. You get to pick what everything looks like.
And its remnants are in our fiber of being. It becomes almost part of our DNA, because it becomes a part of us that we can't let go.
Yeah.
Yeah. With that in mind, then, I like that, too, about talking about how the reader completes the journey. So in a perfect world, that's silly, not in a perfect world, in our world, because we don't live in a perfect world, but in our world, with the programs you're putting in, with the programs you're putting into place, say I'm a reader and I find a book on the subway or underground or whatever, and I start reading, where do you want them to go from there with that? Ultimately, what do you think, not just through social media, but what experiences, what would be the most gratifying for you, for them to talk, even if you never hear that this is happening, for them to start talking to people during their day, oh my gosh, I found this, thing while I was, just going to work, and this was so amazing, and, I need to tell you about this, or what is the reaction? What are you really ultimately with people, not just with from the social media aspect, but what do you think would be the best reaction for this, I guess, to complete that circle?
I'm going to let Rosie answer that.
Yeah. Sorry, you were saying?
I was going to let Rosie answer that first.
Oh, okay. So basically, we talked about what kind of books, what kind of titles, what kind of genres I leave on the subway. And this is an opportunity for people to step out of their comfort zone as well. I don't know. This is a crime book. Would I ever read it? But hey, it's free. It's on the subway. Let me take it and read it. And, perhaps they would enjoy it and just expose themselves to a whole new genre that they're not used to. Or, again, someone who may not read them, free book. Let me take that. And then, enjoy this whole reading on the subway thing. It passes the time. So maybe I should find another book or try and go rent one or buy one. So what I really want people to take from this is to, open up. Open up your mind, broaden your, horizon. Explore things that you might not have done for yourself, but here is an opportunity that's given to you. And just see it and see where it takes you, Some people don't read. Maybe this is an opportunity to get them to read. Some people don't have money to go buy books and don't have time to go to the library. This could be their, secret hour for them on the train where they can read and just, be themselves on their own, So I really think this is an opportunity for people to just step out of their comfort zone and or at least attempt to do that. This is a book that's been given to you. It's right on the seat right next to you. So where does it take you? I don't know. Maybe you read a new genre. Maybe you read more books. Maybe just develop a small interest in books. Also, just the fact that read books still exist. You don't need to stare at your phone all day long. You don't need to resort to high-tech stuff in order to pass the time. You can go back to the good old book. So I think this is what I want people to take from this.
And for me, it goes to what you were saying, actually, about getting them to start conversations. Like I mentioned, talking to their uncle or their aunt or their mom or their dad or their grandparents, their best friend, their sister, their cousin. Getting everyone to do the old-fashioned networking, the old-fashioned social networking, mm-hmm. is what you said, hearth and home, fireplace, dining room table, getting people in the living rooms talking again, and getting that whole undercurrent of conversation going again about things that excite us, things that surprise us, things that shock us, things that touch us, things that resonate with us, but all from stories and characters and supporting cast and settings and locales and eras and history and all those beautiful things that light up your mind every time you pick up a book or a story. And like Rosie said, you can go anywhere you want. The compass has no point on it. It changes every time you go into a new author or a new genre or another new work of literature. Everything is unlimited and everything is timeless. So I think if we can encourage conversation and interpersonal connections again through friendships through books and friendships through talking about stories, I think that's part of the whole point, I think, really, at the end of the day. Even as a book blogger, I want people to be encouraged to talk, in person. And like Rosie said, not texting, not even tweeting all the time. Although tweet to say that you're happy, you know, that helps Rosie and Holly know that what they're doing is not only important but appreciated. But to talk just by voice and by phone and get away from the technology for a while and realize there's so much more to living than just the technology side of it. We need to remember how to make connections and to stay connected.
You know, a lot of people ask me, what if people don't put the book back on the subway? And I'm like, so what? So what? Let them take it. Let them take this book and read it. Maybe pass it on to a friend then. Maybe pass it on to a brother.
They need
sister.
It.
Yeah, like whoever. I mean, at some point that book is going to go to someone, whether it's the next day or whether it's in a couple of years. But, you know, just I don't care if they don't put them back on the subway, as long as it's making a difference for someone.
Well, listening to you all talk, I think one of the things I'm listening to is that I think is cool, though, is that it comes full circle. You mentioned, like, people on the subway may not have time to go to a library, but I also think that what you're doing also helps the library world, too, which is where you get face-to-face interaction, book clubs, a sense of direct community, children's programs with reading, things like that, a lot of personal interaction away from the technology. But the introduction to books and reading, again, can actually draw back in a full circle way and actually probably pull some people back to libraries, which are struggling in their own way now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, and I think people forget that the libraries are free. Like, people are shocked in my local community that I don't rent DVDs anymore. I never had Netflix, but I had Blockbuster way back when that was popular. That shows how old I am. But I borrow them. I borrow all DVDs from the library. That includes the BBC as well as theatrical releases that I'm interested in, which is more limited than most. I look for the quality. But I also borrow books. I use my interlibrary loan service. And people say, well, how much did you pay for that, or what is that charge? And I'm like, it's a public library. Now, I know some libraries do have charges, so I have to state I'm in Florida, so that I can only go by where I am. But for the most part, borrowing a book is free. And the books on the underground and books on the subway is promoting that not only is knowledge free for everyone, but so is reading. Reading should always be available to those that want to read and those that are willing to read and spend the time to soak into that character and into that story. Oh, and also I meant to tell you, they inspired someone else. There's books on the Metro now out of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I was going to bring it up. They tweeted a while ago that they're listening in, so shout out to Books on the Metro in D.C.
Yay!
So, yeah, we might have another person interested in another city in the U.S., but we're still in the works there. So I love how this is spreading. Holly, midnight in London right now, but I think she should be thrilled that she started this, and it's rolling through the world.
That's awesome.
Well, my own mom and dad are hoping Chicago and Boston, so even my parents are behind the movement.
That's
awesome.
So cool. See, I think that's great. I mean, like what you said, I'm insanely pro-library. I've been talking to Steven as we've been setting stuff up for doing EvilCon next weekend. But I feel like I would not be the writer I am or the person I am. I could tell you the Alexandrian Public Library where I'm doing something at the end of the month, but I could probably, if they haven't changed anything around, tell you exactly where the books are that I used to read all the time. I could probably, in my mind, like, tell you exactly inch by inch of that building where everything is. I think it's so, you know, the programs that they had affected me on a deep, fundamental level, and I think it's so important for people to get back to the libraries, you know, to get back to talking to people. I mean, I see people, I have my library buddies. There's a guy named Alec, an older gentleman at the library I go to now, and we only talk, like, at the library, and, you know, it's always, like, about what we're reading or stuff, but I always say hi to him when he's there because I've done, like, different, like, I don't know, free library classes together and stuff, and it's just so much fun to check in with him, and I would love to see, like, these Metro programs sort of do, like, a moving version of that. Like, it would be so great to see people, you know, over time, like, begin to connect and, like, talk to each other again over books. It's just such a cool, powerful thing.
You know, during this harsh winter that we've been experiencing, every time I go out, I have, like, 3 layers of clothes and scarves, and in the subway, everyone's so bundled and we're so squeezed that I found it really hard to read during that time. So I was thinking of getting a Kindle, and I'm like, it should make my life much easier. But I could not get myself to get one. Every time I would go to a bookstore or pass by one, I'm like, and I look around, I'm like, how can I give this up for a Kindle? I don't think I can do that. I literally felt like I'm betraying every single book in that bookstore if I go get a Kindle. I know everyone, like, says it's really, really good to read and it helps them read more. It's just, for me, I think that walk into a bookshop or a bookstore or even Barnes & Noble, like, I'm not going to dish on the big store, any bookstore where they have, like, floor-to-ceiling bookshelves filled with every single kind of book that you can imagine, and I look at them and I'm like, holy wow, I don't think I can give this up for a Kindle and just go browse online for the next book I want to read. There's something really fundamentally special about just going and picking up a book. It doesn't feel good in my hand. I don't want to read this. Or, you know what, I love this book. I don't know what it's about, but it's just, you know, I'm going to read it, you know. When you go and you look at these books and just get inspired by everything that's around you, I think this is a whole experience on its own. That's why, like, I think I just wiped the Kindle out of my mind. I'm like, nope, I can't give up those bookstore visits.
I completely concur with you, Rosie. I have my own passionate reason against e-books and e-technology, but I've tempered it by showcasing e-books that I hope go to POD or print at some point in the future. So I'm actually doing book spotlights and book features on my blog for those specific books where I think could reach a wider audience if it goes to print someday. But the reason I'm passionately against it is because, for me, I personally connect on a tangible level with a book in hand. It's not even just my vision, which I can't handle looking at a screen for long lengths of time. But for me, the whole connection to the world of the book is through holding it in my hands and turning the pages individually and reading it off the printed page in front of me rather than the virtual screen. And so I never even considered getting an e-reader, to be honest, but I always do support others that need to have other gadgets or other supportive technology in order to be adaptive to their reading habits. I'm not just talking about people with learning difficulties or disabilities, but people that maybe process information in different ways. So in that way, I fully support it, as well as any other adaptive technology that helps someone. But on an individual level, I agree with both of you. I have a whole history of independent bookstores and libraries. I still remember the card catalog I needed help with at the librarian at the big city public library. I couldn't get the card catalog down because I was too short and it was too tall. And I remember she had to come over and help me take it out, and I got to look through index cards and see what book I wanted. I still remember the railings and the staircases and the independent bookstore. I could tell you the whole map of that place, and it was one of the largest in the Southeast. And I think when you have those memories, it changes you. It changes your perception on almost everything, how you see life and how you put the pieces together and how you connect the puzzles. I think reading opens doors that maybe we're not even fully aware of until we start to get older and mature and see things through those lenses, is what I'm trying to say.
I think Jory nailed it when she was talking about the loss of interpersonal connection and all, because I was just thinking my favorite living author, my favorite authors are C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, of course, but favorite living author is George R. R. Martin, and the reason I discovered him was because I like to frequent Joseph Beth Booksellers here in Lexington, and they have really engaged booksellers who are really wonderful, and you get to know them and trust them, and that's how I discovered Martin, was just because I go in there and talk and word of mouth kind of things and personal interaction. And so, I mean, I think that personal aspect of a bookstore and its anchor is a center for bringing people together, I think, is really, really important in terms of the tangible world versus, like, the e-book world.
Right,
you
exactly.
You guys made me just
and
flashback.
I've also noticed there are different regions in the United States. It's actually become a regional difference. The Northeast has a very strong bookish culture, for instance, parts of the Southeast do, but I think the Midwest kind of overshadows them a little bit because the Midwest is very strong. And the other parts I don't know as well. I've only been to the Pacific Northwest once. And I think if we can start knitting these connections together again through encouraging people to go to their bookstore, like you said, whether it's a big box one or it's an independent one, encouraging people to go back to their libraries, and just encouraging people to talk about books. Like if I wanted to share something with you, I still remember being in a coffee house with my mom, and I was so excited about the first, I think, four chapters of a book I was reading that I got all bubbly and excited, and I started talking about these characters and these lives like they were actual people in our everyday world, to where the barista said, oh, is that your uncle or your brother? And I'm like, no, it's this really interesting character in a book. It's a book. I'm like, yes, it's a book. But you were talking about it like they're part of your family or your friendship circle. And I said, because that's what reading is for me. Those characters become your friends. They become your extended family. And if you can get that passionate about them and promote them and encourage people, then I think that's all part of it as well. Is everyone there?
I didn't know if you were done. We've got about 8.5 minutes, and I just want to make sure, Jory, you mentioned you had an announcement maybe to make. I just want to make sure that if you had something to talk about, we got that in.
Yes. Later tonight, I'm launching Booking the Rails, which is a joint project between Books on the Subway and Books on the Underground. It's a feature exclusive to JoryLovesAStory.com, and it's called Booking the Rails. And I don't want to give away too much, but each Book in the Rails feature is going to be a book review and a showcase of one of the books that either Rosie or Holly dropped on the trains. And that's my contribution to getting this to become a contagiously social conversation, where people get excited and happy about talking about book culture and books and authors and stories that light up their lives and bring them some joy. Oh, and I also want to say that Holly is Books on the Underground, which is at Books, UNDERGRND, which is on Twitter, or she's booksontheunderground.tumblr.com.
And Jory, and go ahead and give your main links again on Twitter and so forth too.
Oh yes, I can be found at J Loves a Story at Twitter, or Jory JORIE Loves a Story. .com. Oh, and I forgot to say, I have a new hashtag. It's hashtag booking the rails.
Booking the rails spelled out. Okay. Good deal. Good deal. Well, wow. I mean, yeah, this has been a cool episode because we've covered quite a bit and a lot of good kind of foundational kind of stuff, and I really, really appreciate this particular show because it definitely gets at stuff that I'm definitely believing and support. So I'm excited about Booking the Rails. It's going to be a fun feature, and following Books on the Subway and Books on the Metro, the DC one that we learned about tonight.
I haven't pulled in Books on the Metro yet. Booking the Rails is going to focus on Books on the Subway and Books on the Underground.
I'll have to
come up with something for Books on the Metro as time goes by. But this was a Booking the Rails I put together with Holly and Rosie.
Yeah, we got a nice greeting from Books on the Metro tonight on Twitter, by the way. They said they're really enjoying tonight's show. So, yeah, we do follow the Twitter feeds, everybody. And Jory sure fills them up on other nights when she's not a guest or hosting. Those are always fun.
Jory, you need to start giving blogging lessons.
What do I need to give?
You need to give blogging lessons. Like, I can learn a lot from you.
Oh, I'll start emailing you. I do tutor for Twitter right now, so I think people in the chamber know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know.
Yep.
Including someone that was asking tonight.
I'm still trying to figure out what direction I want my blog to go to. Right now, it's kind of all over the place. I randomly post stuff, so I think moving forward, it has to get a better direction. But, you know, this is all for fun as well as doing good. So I'll figure it out.
Rosie, I'll be glad to continue that conversation with you. Totally.
Great.
I'm going to have to get with you, Jory, because we'll have to send some books up to donate to the program as well. Because I know Jory, I'm sure wouldn't like Jackie Gamber's books up there and some others that I know she's familiar with. So
I would definitely wholeheartedly love to see New Yorkers reading her books. The Leland Province has really touched me on a deep level.
Yeah, I figured that would be one. So, yeah, we'll have to definitely connect so I can send some books up there because I'm also a tangible book fan as well. So that's a great, great thing. But, yeah, definitely like to follow the progress of all of it. And, you know, like I said, you know, have you guys back at some point, you know, to give some updates and see how everything's going and growing and interconnecting with, you know, some of your other groups. And, definitely have
back
to have you back.
I'd like to see if Books on the Metro could join us and maybe Holly if we can get the time difference to work.
Yeah. We've had one Australian guest, so it is possible. We just have to coordinate really, really carefully. But,
I think Holly had opted out due to her workload, which I understand.
Right. Yeah, it's a late. Yeah, they got about a 6-hour time difference from us in the Eastern time zone, so yeah, they're pretty. Yeah, that's pretty late for sure. But
Rosie,
why
don't you do your shout outs?
Yeah.
Shout out to Holly.
Any shout out to Holly, to where people can find you online, stuff like that.
Yeah, so everyone can find me online on Twitter at BooksSubway, so BOOKS Subway. And you can go to my blog at booksonsubway.com, and hopefully that blog will start becoming more and more along the lines of Jory's blog, I have to say. I'm impressed. And I really want to give a shout-out to Holly because all of this would not have happened without her. I am a bit jealous of her that she came up with this idea and I didn't, but I'm glad that we were able to connect and spread this around, and it looks like it's spreading. And big thanks for Holly for being so willing to share her idea across the world.
And for those that want to check out Washington, D.C., go to @booksmetro. That's BOOKSMETRO at Twitter.
All right, and you want to give a quick announcement that next week. Sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, I'm just saying my contact info is on my my blog and my Twitter. So if any author listening would like to send books to me or to Books Metro or Underground, just please reach out.
And please stop by Joy Loves a Story and check out the Book in the Rails features. Be part of the conversation. Always comment. My comments are open to email, WordPress users, Google+, Facebook, and Twitter. No captcha.
And I can say for sure that Jory will respond to you if you comment, so I encourage you to do so for sure. But next week we have an author guest who's wonderful. It's Anderson O'Donnell, whose book was one of the top 25 in Kirkus Reviews Indie Books of 2012. He's going to be joining us in the Star Chamber to talk about a special announcement that is occurring next Wednesday. So that's next week's show, and so we want to definitely give a plug for that one. And then the week after, we're going to have on April the 2nd, Linda DeLeon, who will be coming in on behalf of Southern Haunts 2, Devils in the Darkness, which is new anthology from Alexander S. Brown and Louis Myers that is debuting this weekend in Memphis at Mid-South Con. So those are the next two shows coming up. So So here we are in the last minute. So, yeah, just any last comments or well wishes for a good night, I'll leave the floor to all of our co-hosts and guests.
I just wanted to say, if you have a library that you're not sure how to get involved in conversations with people and you knit, bring your yarn, your needles, and your knitting projects, and you'd be impressively amazed on how many conversations start just by someone seeing you knitting.
Word.
Yeah, no sailor would agree with that.
Yeah,
it opens
1,000%.
It really opens doors, and you even start talking about books and authors, and then you're checking out more books than you thought you could that week, and you're talking about knitting projects and natural fibers.